with Mr. Gavin Adcock. How you doing, Gavin?
I'm doing good. Can't complain.
Saw you were in San Antonio last night.
Yes, sir. We went to the Cowboys Dance Hall over there.
How was it?
It was good until I woke up this morning early and I was kind of hungover.
What were you drinking?
Lots of Jack.
Man, that's what I had last night myself. I'm glad we had the same one. I had quit drinking for close to like 6 or 7 months. I made this rule that unless I was celebrating a special occasion or with people I loved, I wasn't going to drink. And so I did that for quite a while, and I was able to maintain it, cut it back. But then Jack Daniel's my first batch, so now that's all I really drink now is Jack when I do drink.
Yeah, man, I need to get on that strategy.
How many how many Jack drinks do you think you had last night? And do you shoot it or do you do mixed drinks?
I mean, maybe like 14.
14.
Yeah, not padding that number either.
Hey, what time do you fall asleep or pass out?
About 1:30 or 2.
Oh, that's not too bad then. I mean, at least you don't stay up till 5 a.m. drinking, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't be here.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, but that's like you wouldn't be able to do your job, right? If you stay up till like 5 a.m. all the time doing that.
No doubt. Yeah. No doubt. After the shows, we try to tone it down. We might party one night a weekend like real hard, but We did that a lot last fall, and that adds up.
Is it the guys around you too, or is it just you just like to drink, like, or is it the people that you're partying with? Like you party like with people that like fans or just randoms? Like how's?
I mean, if I go to the bar like I did last night, there was a bunch of fans and randoms coming up, be like, take a shot with me, and I'm just so I took them, and James over here, he was like, you need to learn. No.
Well, yeah. Here in a little bit, I'll tell you about the first time I met James on my birthday.
Yeah.
We'll tell you where we had our music meetings. They were Jack Daniels was close by. We'll just say that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like though when you're drinking and you're doing that, because I was going to ask you like when you're drinking and you're on stage, like if you ever actually realize how drunk you are, or if like the adrenaline is pumping so hard that you're kind of like, can't really feel it. You're just sort of like in just go mode, and the alcohol is just sort of like just going. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the guys on the bus, we always try to stay occupied till about at least 2 hours before the show before we make our first drink. I really like to go till about 30 minutes before, have me a shot, have me a beer, one more shot before I go on. And a lot of nights I get off stage and I'm not drunk. I got a few beers and a buzz, you know.
You wouldn't be able to like. You wouldn't still be able to sing, right? Like, have you ever been that wasted on stage? Like, where you got too drunk before?
I have. I've looked at my tour manager before. We played on Halloween in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I came up to him for the show, and I said, I think we've been drinking for about 5 or 6 hours for the show. I came up to him, and I was, like, mumbling. I was like, man, I don't know how we're going to do this. And I went up there, and we didn't miss a beat. I don't know. The adrenaline kicks in, and you get away from that.
Yeah, because, like, so I've worked in clubs my whole life, man, so all I did was binge drink, right? So, like, everything you're talking about, I've been through it all. And, you know, and anyone who's, like, kind of lived that lifestyle of, like, whether it's clubs or music industry and stuff, it's part of it until you choose, like, hey, I'm going to go ahead and corral this, right? Like, because, like, something happens, it's always going to happen, you know, that you're going to end up in this place where you're like, oh, I can't drink like that anymore. But when I think about the clubs going back to when so I started DJing like in the honky tonk because I was always the MC, so it didn't matter as long as I could just complete sentences. It didn't matter. Only one time did I ever have to give the mic away. I was like, dude, I can't talk. Like, I don't know what to say. Here's a microphone. Take this thing away. But now I feel the adrenaline of like DJing, like actually, like, and I feel like I'm singing the songs. And it's a country bar, right? So it's not like a fist pumping DJ. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm playing like love songs and stuff. But I couldn't feel the alcohol the same way. I was like, whoa, so that must be what happens with the artist when y'all are drinking and partying and on stage, you get this like crazy adrenaline rush. And so then when you get off stage, it takes forever for that to go down, right?
Yeah. I've never missed a show. I had to stop a show from being too drunk. There was probably a couple of times where I towed the line, but I've got to the point in the mindset where this just is too big of stuff going on. There's 7,000 people out there some nights and growing. I can't risk them not getting their show.
Absolutely. You know? So and that's wise of you, man, because like they're paying their hard-earned money to come watch your show, and you can't be up there just like just being a complete train wreck. Like, like sure, like the persona, you know, the party vibe, you know, sort of the party president, you know, because you're definitely shotgunning beers and encouraging like sort of the wildness, which I kind of wanted to ask about the beer throwing, right?
Yeah.
So I saw, and I will say, when I saw you at White Oak here in Houston, I had three IPAs before the show, and then I had like two tall boys. Dude, I was seeing double. And it was funny to me because you were up there, and I was like, golly, am I that drunk? Like, I was like having this like self-awareness moment. Like, am I buzzing that hard? And I thought, well, I guess it's a Gavin Adcock show, so I should be have a good buzz. But I didn't get to see like the full onslaught of the throwing of the beer. How did that all start? And like, did you encourage it to happen? Like, or did it just kind of happen? You smiled at them and then like you know what I mean? I just don't know how that, because Treaty Oak Revival is the other band that I think about that kind of has that similar experience at a show.
Yeah, the first time it ever happened, I was playing in Newport, Kentucky, which is like right on the Cincinnati line. And the show had gone great. It was one of the biggest headline shows I ever played at the time. I think it was like 1,800 people. And we were playing my last song, Deep End, and we got to the end, and I said, if you got a drink, throw that mother. And I meant like splash the beer. I mean, that was about 500 cans flying through the air. I got, and for a while there, it got real bad. But I've got to the point where I tell them, if there's a couple, I'll let it slide, because if you acknowledge it, sometimes they want to do it more. For some reason, I don't know where the brain clicks with that. Sometimes I'm like, okay, it'll die down if you don't give them the attention. And I'll tell them, I'll stop show and I'll say, look, if your mama and your sister was up here on the front row, you wouldn't be throwing half full beers. Like, if the can's empty, I don't care. But if it's got some beer, why are you throwing a dang $18 beer?
Right. Like, right.
Your mom and daddy's gonna be pissed when they see your credit card bill in the morning. You know.
Totally. Well, yeah, and you know, I wanted to ask that because online persona, obviously, you know, the outlaw persona, whatever it is, you know, the rowdy hellraiser, you know, but every time I've been around you, like, just like outside, it's twice now, like, you're just a chill dude, right? Like, you just have this other side of you that likes to party, and it comes through in your music, and it's performative, and it's your style. And then when you listen to your music too, like, it's admittedly kind of rough around the edges. Like, you admit to who you are, like sort of your own faults through your music, like Outside Dog, right? Like,
yeah, I've never straight up said, I'm an outlaw country artist. I wear the hat and I wear the old vest and I drink, and people go, oh, he thinks he's so outlaw. I'm like, that's just what I wear, and that's what I drink. That's what I do, you know? So I never want to put that label on myself. If they want to do it, they can, but I'm not going, I'm outlaw. I'm like,
right. And I never heard you like say like, I'm bringing outlaw country music back. Like, there was never like this sort of like you never owned that. Like, to me, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about it. Right. Because I see everything. And so I see the labels here and there, and I was like, well, I don't know, when I was around him, he definitely didn't smash any chairs or tables, and he wasn't like, ordering up shots for the whole bar, like, you know, like, but when you see a video of you after a show and you're like, you know, drinking with the whole bar and stuff, that's what people think comes with Gavin Adcock, right?
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying with that? Mm-hmm. And then I was Googling your name today. First, hold on. I'll go to the Google stuff about Rolling Stone, but in a second. But it's not what you're thinking, because I want to say congratulations on the album, man, because you've been, since like August 15th it came out, Own Worst Enemy, you've been in the top of the Billboard charts just consecutively, like consistently. And congratulations, dude.
Thank you.
Like, it's cover to cover. Like, I was listening to it again today, and I was like, man, like, it was so brilliant to put out so many songs, because now you can kind of ride this, because like Need To went to the, like, it's like one of the most listened to songs in your entire catalog, and it's from your most recent album. Like, that's got to make you feel mm-hmm. great, right? So I guess like over the last like month watching all the consumption of the album, like, how do you feel seeing your music get, you know, consumed on such a level?
It's been great. When I first started making music, I kind of analyzed how everybody let out music. And I feel like they were stuck on the old days of, we'll let out one or two singles and then we'll drop the album. And I told myself, I said, the only way you're going to make it in this business is while everybody else is doing this slow game, you're going to let out more music than everybody else, one at a time. You let out one song over the next 4 to 6 weeks, you better write 4 to 6 more songs. And then you let out one more. And then you write 4 to 6 more. I try to write a song a week. I've let out over a song a month over my career. Ever since I started. I think we're at 60-something songs. And
so you're saying it was planned, like it was like a strategic rollout of music, and you try to stay ahead so that you can continue the career forward, right? If I'm understanding you right.
Yes, yeah, so like you can write your ass off and let out this album, and it's gonna have one big spike, and it's gonna come back down, or you can let out one, and then you can let out another, and you can let out another, and build up for that huge spike. And then honestly, I'm getting ready to let out some more music here in the next few weeks.
Wow, I mean, that's a quick turnaround. I mean, it's only been a month, right? And yeah. So the goal is, I guess, you're keeping the ball in the air, right? You're just keeping your name top of mind. And also, after, if you think about the way we listen, or I'm not really sure how you listen to it, but I'll find a new song and I'll consume the heck of it for a few weeks, and I'll just listen to, like, right now, Ocean Blue by Chase Beckham. It's one of my favorite songs out right now. Yeah. And I just keep on going back and just listen to it again. But I know in here in a few weeks, like, I'm going to move on to something else. So I'm also a Chase Beckham fan. So, like, I would like him to, like, drop another one. And so that's kind of what you're doing, is catering to those fans. And the fans just keep showing up from elsewhere too, right? Because
it's kind of like you download a song on Apple Music, or you download an album, it pops up. If you drop a single, they download it. 3 weeks later, you drop a single, they've downloaded 3 more songs. There it is again. And then they swipe through their favorite songs they've listened to all year, and you're popping up 15 different times instead of just one album that you're going to scroll by eventually, because you're going to get tired of it, no matter how much you love it.
I hope people that listen hear what you're saying, because, like, it's actually really brilliant on the streaming game, on how to keep – because everything's algorithmically driven, right? And so you find this way to kind of get into those rhythms, and then you start getting, because, like, the other connections, Vincent Mason, right? Like, y'all's music found me independently, and then I ran into both of y'all in the same place on tour together. And I thought, I was like, wow, that had to have been somewhat calculated, or maybe just they know that those artists, as artists and as sounds and fan bases, they're similar. They're compatible, rather. Right, like, it's like sweet and salty, or sugar, sweet and spicy.
That's how me and Vincent are, and that's why we did a song together last year, and we toured together. It gives you this clean cut, really nice, really sweet guy. Nobody's ever said a single bad thing about him. And then there's me. There's an opinion about me every half a second, good or bad, and it you kind of turn your head and you're like, I kind of see how that works out, because you get a little bit of the best of both worlds, you know?
Absolutely. That's what I saw at White Oak, and I thought it was just so smart, man. And then I can say that about your entire rollout, right? Your entire, like, I can go back to Cigarette, man. And when people first brought that song to me, I was like, oh, okay, it's a waltz, right? And also, man, thanks for all the 3/4 time music, man. Like,
man.
Dude, Unlucky Strikes, dog. I play that in the bar. They waltz to it. It's a must play now. It's so good, dude. It's so good. Anyways, I just kind of see now, and it's great to hear you explain the route, right? Explain how your mind was behind it all. So, you got your first song to country radio, Never Call Again. You get the title right?
Yes, sir.
All right. You got 37 titles, man, or how many titles? It's hard to remember them all. I love the song, man. But I always go back to Need To, and I know I'm a country radio guy, but that, and the reason Need To, I was playing a golf tournament. My best friend had it on, and he had it on repeat. I didn't know why. I was like, bro, how long is this song? He's like, oh no, I just listened to it on repeat. I was like, okay.
Heck,
like,
yeah, that's awesome.
Dude, so we listened to the first 3 holes. It was just, I was like, okay, dude, all right, I get it. I was like, you got me singing it now. We've got to flip it. We got to go to something else. You got to change it up.
It's just great boat music, golf music, or just, it lives in a room really good. And that's something I didn't have in my catalog. I've had to evolve into that type of artist that can do a little bit of both. Because I was always like, all right, we'll start with acoustic. And I'll sing acoustic for the first verse. And then when the chorus hits, it's bam, and it's as loud and as rowdy as the whole song's going to be. And that's not what Need To is. And I'm glad I'm starting to find songs that build, or kind of just have a nice
just live.
Groove.
You like know, you said,
they,
live.
They can
sure.
live in a room. Like, I've got 4-leaf clover and Run Your Mouth.
I love that one, man.
And we could be sitting here, and Need To could be playing in the background, and we could be talking, and it wouldn't be taking over our conversation. But Run Your Mouth and 4-Leaf Clover you'd have to turn it off because it's just so in your face.
That's a great point. And so I play Need To as like my slow two step, right? When I need them to slow down and go, yeah. I need the line dancers to get off the floor and couples, this is your chance to go do a slow dance, right? And that's where Need To falls, which is the same thing. It's just like that, it's that comfortable pair of jeans, you know, just can kick back and just let it flow. All right, so I was Googling your name for research today. 3 days ago, Rolling Stone says, or asked the question, I'm not going to put the words in their mouth, is Gavin Adcock country music's biggest troll? And so I'm just going to ask you to answer the question, how you feel about it, because I am a troll. So I preface that by being honest. Like, I had to stop being a troll because I got to Houston. I was in Corpus Christi. I was in San Antonio. I could get away with it. I had little phantom accounts, and I would just, like, troll people, right?
Yeah.
I just enjoyed doing it. So I will say I am that way. So I just ask you that, just buddy to buddy, you know, how you answer that.
So I will joke around and mess with, like, people that I know have good intentions, good hearts, good outlooks. I'll mess with them. If one of my buddies posts something and I've got something funny to say, I'll comment. But I told this to somebody yesterday. I said, I'm really nice to really nice good people. If you're a really shitty person, I might match that energy and give it right back to you. And I don't care that that they think that, or it really, I'm just taking off with headlines and running with them
right
at that point, you know?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's just when you've got the fire hot, pour some gas on it, you know? So I just don't, there's nobody out there that can stir them up like I've been doing lately. And some people will bitch about it, but they'll tell 30 people, oh, I hate Gavin Adcock. He does this and he does this and he does this. And six of them are going to go, well, I never heard his music. So they listen. And then when they leave, they go, yeah, it's pretty good. And then they're a fan, you know? So there's pluses and minuses for all.
And dude, I'll tell you what, your music lives in the real world. Those opinions live in the internet world.
Yeah.
And all the trolls live in the internet world. And in the real world, your music's getting listened to and people are listening in their real life. They're listening to your music, right? Who cares how many reels or TikToks they make with your music as long as they're listening to it, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, who cares what the opinion, and man, we live in this world where everyone's got a say in something, right? And I think everyone's kind of worn out about it. Like everyone who's kind of got the say, like anyone who's like pulpiting all the time, right?
Yeah.
I hate this person. Like, well, it's starting to get tired, right? It rolls out. Like, and I guess one of my questions I had for you too was, how hard is it being like fielding all the BS? Like when you read through like.
So,
people say such shitty things sometimes, and like, and it, I know it got it. Like, do you just ignore it? Do you post and ghost, and you just let it go? Don't go back looking in the comment section. Like,
I mean, I'll check out the comments, and if they say something like really terrible, I'll just block them. I'm like, well, you've lost privilege to see me. I don't need you. I don't need your listen. I don't need your opinion. The thing is, it was like I had my opinion about Beyonce, and for about 2 weeks. They were like, you don't know what you've done. You've stirred up the beehive. And it was just, for 2 weeks, was some grown-up folks commenting bee comments, making my posts go nuts, spread me around the world. And I hadn't posted anything today, but I usually post 3 or 4 times a day. And after the 7th or 8th time that those people comment on your post, and I post way too much for them to even keep up, they fade away because they eventually go, why am I spending my life commenting bees on this guy's page? He's not going to stop. It's not stopping him, and it's not going to. It's just, and the same thing with the Zach Bryan fans. They're coming around, and they're gonna be around for a couple weeks, and I don't know, in 3 months, there'll be a comment every once in a while, but I'm just like, bring it on.
It's just noise.
Yeah, and I am a troll with this. I love taking advantage of other people's fans that hate me and stirring them up just to get it to more people that want to listen to my music and know my values and know who I am. I have a good time, and I'm opinionated. I'm never going to not be opinionated. And They hate that.
Well, yeah, and also, man, your music's great. So that's the other that's the finger trap, right? To me, of the internet finger trap of Gavin Adcock is you can be as mad as you want about him, and the more you tout about Gavin Adcock and make your friends go listen to him, you're actually going to turn more fans. Like, that's what's happening. Your music is really great, dude. And I don't think that you're like, I like, you know, this is a, I'm a 42-year-old man. I've been on the internet since first came out, dude. I've watched it all. Like, it's entertaining. I don't think that it's hurtful, which is the most important part, right? I think that's the most important thing of all the kind of crazy stuff is, like, whatever you seem to have said or done, it's never been hurtful, right? But your music is great. And so no matter what happens, everyone turns around, they go back to music, and you get this awesome product again, right? You get this, like, and then they can go back as far as they want, and then go back to Cigarette, and they're going to get another really great song, right? So, like, the catalog front to back is awesome, man. So, anyways, I'm glad I got to talk to you, dude. I could sit here and BS another 20 minutes, dude. I knew you were coming to town. I was really, really eager to get to chat with you because last time we got to have a couple beers and talk music and stuff, but it's better to get to open it up. But appreciate you being so open and talking, man. Also, congratulations on the Morgan Wallen tour. What was that like, dude? I'm gonna keep you for like 5 more minutes.
It was great. I love playing shows for people that have no idea who I am. I mean, there was a handful of my fans there, but you walk out in the stadium and there's 27,000 people when you start, and there's about 38,000 people, 35,000 people when you get done. And you get off stage and the band goes, "That show is okay." I'm like, it was okay because they weren't screaming every word. But when we come back here and headline our own show, we're going to grab a bunch of these people, and they're going to be our fans as well as Morgan's. And so you really got every show, headline show that we play, I can stick the mic out there and they'll sing 95% of everything. But that's what I got to keep the guys knowing that when we play those shows where I have to sing every single word and they don't know it, is better than a headline show where everybody's singing them, because you are grabbing people that have no idea who you are.
Were those some of your biggest crowds you've seen?
It had to be. I think, like, the lowest amount that was in there by the time I played was probably 25, and then the max was like 38.
Ooh.
But 38 is definitely the most I've ever played.
And you can visibly see it, right, Phil? Like, you can. Oh man,
yeah. That, like, Morgan's got those bracelets they have that they're insane. They go to each song. They light up, sparkle. It looks like people's got phones up the whole show. Well, that last show I was playing Need To. And I was like, let's see how many people we got in here. Y'all turn y'all's flashlights on. And it was just, I mean, there was a ton of folks in there. It's larger than life. And it's honestly, for some reason, I get a little more, I get nervous to play for tiny crowds. Like, if I'm playing for like 15 people, I'll get more nervous. And then for the stadium show, it's like, it's kind of overwhelming because you can't interact with every single person in there like you could when you're playing a 500 cap show. You could look from corner to corner and see everybody, but it's like you just kind of make your way around the stage and you just interact with as many people as you can, but you're never going to be able to get them all.
Right. You give as many high fives as you can, let them know, "Yo, I see you, I see you, I see you, I see you." Because some of your fans are probably in the front row too, those, because like they're like, "Man, I'm going to go to a Morgan show, but I'm going to go see Gavin in the front, in the front row." So, well, man, I appreciate it, man. Keep up all the great work and successes. Can't wait to see where you go from here, dude. It's only going to get better. Can't wait to hear the new music you teased. And that's Gavin Adcock, everybody. Thanks for being here.
We'll see you when we come back.